Well, thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos with the Mile High Show. I am recording today at Gabby's Kitchen in Chino Valley. I don't know their address, but we'll put a link up on it. They're right there at the roundabout on 4 South and Highway 89 at Windy Plaza. Jim Cabral and his wife Kelly are the owners of Gabby's, both Prescott and Prescott Valley, and also the brand new Gabby's Bar and Grill at the Prescott Valley Entertainment District there by the Harkins Theater on the corner of near the corner of Glassford Hill and Highway 69 in Prescott Valley. It is a new venture for them and hopefully a new recording home for the Mile High Show. We're going to go talk to Jimmy Cabral there shortly and try and set up where we can do some live recording there in front of audiences with some of our local musicians, entertainers, and characters here in the Prescott Valley, Chino Valley, Dewey Humboldt, blah, 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 the, what do we call it, the Quad City area in Yavapai County. There's some great folks to interview and some great art and performers to bring to the public. So we're hoping to do so at the new Gabby's Bar and Grill. Today's episode is going to be with Danny Fisher, a Arizona-based, Chino Valley-based artist and musician who's recently relocated from Pennsylvania. And she contacted me. I haven't met Danny. So it'll be interesting to put a face and voice to the emails that we've been trading. She has some good projects coming up, some gallery showings, and hopefully some new music we can listen to in the near future. She's still unpacking, so she'll be here in a few minutes. Again, Danny Fisher, local artist and musician. We'll hear her story and what she has to say in just a few minutes on the Mile High Show. So stay tuned. Thanks for listening. So, Danny Fisher, tell us who you are. First off, welcome. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming and sharing water.
Absolutely. Water in the desert is important. Well,
give me your Reader's Digest bio.
Story of Danny Fisher, what she did.
Let's get that close.
Okay. When I was 5, my parents moved to Arizona from Pennsylvania, and I lived in Phoenix. And we had this art teacher that put us out under this hot metal pavilion, so it was like toasting children. And I was a chubby little Dutch kid, PA Dutch kid, eating shoe fly pie out in the desert where it was hot and sweaty, and I felt so out of sorts. And the art teacher gave me 2 pieces of clay, and it felt so nice and cool, and it gave me comfort. And I knew when I was 5 I wanted to be an artist. So I wound up spending half my life in Pennsylvania and half my life in Arizona. My mom lived in Pennsylvania, my dad in Arizona. And the last 7 years, I've been back in Pennsylvania, but I recently returned to Chino Valley because I'm 40 now, I'm cold, and I want to be in the desert, and it totally feels right ever since I got home. So I'm an artist that traveled a lot on both places. If I was going through puberty, they'd send me to my mom in Pennsylvania. If I needed a strong hand, they'd send me to my dad in Phoenix. So I'm very familiar with both sides, but I'm home. And I'm still going to travel and do art shows, but my home base is now in Chino, and I'm back. I'm an artist and a musician. I taught for 20 years, and I'm proud to say at 40 that I don't teach much anymore. And I taught in the schools, but I developed my own after-school clay program called Mud Puppies. I was a crisis counselor. Now I'm just all about my horses and my family and my dogs and painting as much as possible, and I just reconnected with a new musician out here in Prescott Valley, and I'm starting a band again. But I actually contacted you because before I moved out here, I was scoping Craigslist all the time and seeing, you know, trying to connect. I'm always about networking and connecting and collaborating with people, and this lady said that they were looking for free vendors for an event in Prescott Valley that artists could come out and musicians could come out. And I started talking to her and I said, well, where's the Facebook page for this? And how are people going to know about this? So I connected with Kathy Day, and she's a jewelry artist. and had done some of the things at the courthouse in Prescott. And, you know, the vending fees are pretty harsh on people, especially people like us. So Harkins Theater has given her the space, and Fane, that whole area, they've offered the space. What is that, kids, the fun corner there? What is that called?
Freedom Station.
Freedom Station is offering a 15% discount that day and letting us use our restrooms. And so far we have we have 20 vendors to run an event that benefits the Yavapai Food Bank and Humane Society.
Let's get some of the business end out of the way first. So again, Danny Fisher, what is it's on your business card here, so I'm assuming all this is public that you want
Absolutely.
To get out there.
You can call me.
How do people get in touch with you?
You can find me on Facebook. It's Danny Fisher. You can call me at 610-823-3742. Call or text. You can email me at howlinhands@hotmail.com. howlinhands@hotmail.com. And my website's also dannyfisher.gallery. dannyfisher.gallery.
Okay, and I'll put links to all this on my Facebook posts and on the MileHighShow.com website as well.
Stuff.
Good deal.
There you go.
So, do you consider yourself more of a visual artist or a musician, or do you even see a difference between the two art forms?
I have more experience with visual art, so I'm more confident and comfortable with promoting myself. I've been through a couple of bands. I had this gallery in Boyertown, Pennsylvania, which is ironically the most racist town where the KKK hang out. And the corner the KKK used to have their rallies is where I stuck my pottery shop. And we had belly dancers and yoga and open mics and all kinds of stuff going on. So I like to believe that even if I couldn't change the entire town, I left a portal there for people to come through. But I had this gallery, and we started open mics there. And I sang when I was younger, but I started singing like 4 years ago, and just kind of still working on collaborating, and now I'm starting to write originals. So, yes, I'm definitely more comfortable in the visual art world, but it's all connected. I mean, all of these things are gifts you're given when your birthright to be alive, you know.
So expressions of various forms, whether that be vocal, musical, artistic, they all kind of intertwine as far as in your brain.
I think collaborating with people and being part of the community is also its own art form. I never wanted to be Van Gogh cutting my ear off, depressed in a corner, because I went to a bunch of different colleges for art and art therapy and psychology and religious studies. I went to 8 different colleges, and I'm still proud of that. But what I noticed in the art colleges is people come out of art school and they're like, oh, I can make this, I can make that, I'm a great artist, I learned my skills, but they didn't really teach them how to promote themselves. And I feel like the whole promotion and connecting to your community and humanity and other people is part of your art form, and I believe they should teach more of that. Frankly, there's a bunch of amazing artists, and we all do need to be alone to create and focus. Like, that's part of the thing, is we need to focus and stay still and create our pieces. But part of the whole human experience and being an artist is telling people who you are, and you're giving them a piece of yourself.
And to see it. I mean, a great piece of art or a great musical composition doesn't do any good if it's locked away in somebody's attic or in a briefcase somewhere.
No, and that has to do a lot. I think a lot of people were raised, I mean, my dad's in business for himself, and my mother was a jeweler in business for herself and a laser engraver. My father's, he remodels fancy houses on Camelback Mountain and in Scottsdale. And
he's still in the Phoenix area?
Yes, but they both had their own businesses, but they both pushed me for the whole summers off 401k and benefits type thing. You know, so I think a lot of times artists, they get stuck in the mindset, or just people in general, of what they can and can't do because of that security. And really, none of us really have any security, to be honest.
Yeah. So I want to talk more about the event at Harkins. Mm-hmm. That's kind of why we connected to begin with. But let's drop back a couple of years to you coming to Arizona. Mom and Dad had split.
That was when I was younger, yet probably I moved back and forth a lot between almost all the way to high school. I went back and forth every couple of years.
When was it you first touched that cool clay?
That was kindergarten.
So five-ish years old. And that's when you realized you wanted to be an artist, or had it already been fostering? You said you knew at five you wanted to be an artist.
Well, you know, even before that, before we moved, I remember in like preschool, we made this, it was in Pennsylvania, and it was Easter time, and I made this bunny with this cut shiny carrot paper for the carrot, and I always got a lot of attention. Like, my mom is an artist with jewelry.
With jewelry. And so it was a fostering home that you grew up in, that they encouraged the,
you know,
free expression?
They were creative. Well, my dad was, back in the day, he was a, you know, biker, and he's mellowed out a lot. He's still got a big white beard and goes hunting all the time, but our lifestyle was very unconventional, and I got a lot of attention from my creativity.
Good, good.
You know, so.
A lot of times that's not the case. We were talking before we turned the mics on. My main focus, my vocation for all of my adult life has been photography.
Don't break the crayon.
Well, yeah, it was just photography. I'm the youngest of five kids. My brothers were both in the trades. My oldest brother, a mechanic. My other brother, a carpenter. Every uncle, cousin, and everything on my mom's side were in the trades, construction trades. When I started doing photography, it was like, this is a great hobby. When are you going to get a real job?
And yeah.
That went on for decades. I was, you know, making a good living as a photographer for a number of years. And it was, so this is great. When, you know, we can get you on as an apprentice, you know,
yeah,
a framer. When are you going to get the real job was always
mentioned. Did you ever notice those people are the same people that if they get an interview on the radio?
No, my mom would always ask, well, this is great. When are you going to get, you know, I can hook you up with Uncle Sal.
Yeah.
He can get you a job. And I did that for a little bit. It wasn't me. I wasn't any good at it.
Yeah, no passion for it.
My construction skills were limited to picking up scrap wood, and that's what they would delegate.
And you're probably wanting to take pictures of it. Going, this looks
I would.
Yeah.
It was just not, you know, part of that, I'm sure, is laziness in my own brain.
See, it's
because
funny.
Photography came natural to me. It was something I enjoyed doing, and yeah, lugging lumber and swinging a hammer, you know, 95 degree weather just didn't seem like fun to me.
Yeah, and you have to enjoy and appreciate what you do. But have you ever noticed that those same people, like, the reason they're concerned about you, and they can cause you to second guess yourself if you allow it, they're concerned and they love you and they want what they believe is
oh,
right.
Oh, no, you don't know my family.
You don't think that's what it was? But at the same time, those are the same people that if they get a chance to be on the radio, or if they see a piece of artwork they like, or a TV show with actors they love, they're the first people to, like, get all gushy and be like, oh, my gosh. Like, they still appreciate it. Not your family? Were they religious? Sometimes.
Yeah.
My grandma was no gambling. She, not even a deck of cards, not even rummy. No gambling.
Oh, we had a lot of fun growing up. The encouragement was to find something practical. And art's not necessarily a practical thing. In my opinion, it's something that's definitely needed, and something that's needed for balance to kind of keep your head balanced. And in your case,
completely practical, and that's why the cavemen were telling people stories with their paintings in the walls to communicate to other people what was going on and what they should look for. And I feel that that's what art does now.
And in your case, it was vital. A life-saving thing to keep that little Dutch kid from frying in the sun. You needed that that cold clay. So you grew up in a home that fostered creativity. That's great. Is that what do you try and do that with your own kids?
I do so much that I think my oldest one is probably going to rebel and be a lawyer or something, because they've always been, like I said, we had the gallery and studio, and from a young age, they were watching me make money do things. So Nathan, when he was little, he's 14 now, he would take little pieces of paper and put a sign up with a table out in front of the shop that said, origami frogs, $1 a piece.
Well, you should sell lemonade to the KKK if they're doing their mark.
Poison lemonade, no, actually. Well, you gotta love everybody, forgive them. But.
Did you ever think about incorporating that in, maybe doing some, you know, like creative hoods for them, tie-dyed hoods and robes for the cake?
Oh, you know what? That might have been.
You could have embraced that.
That could have been something for them, right? I don't know. It was never. you could see it, but they knew not to come around. They knew, basically, they knew not to come where I was.
Come around the weirdo on the corner.
Yeah, they knew better. They have no idea what I'm capable of. But my sons, they used to play the drums, the bongos out in front of the shop with a tip jar and then go buy pizza and Italian ice, you know, like,
nice.
So they're very creative. The oldest one, though, he loves football. He's very structured. He amazes me with how he cleans everything and organizes everything. I'm like, where did this child come from, pretty much?
Siblings in your family. Were you only child?
I was an only child. Yeah. I had stepbrothers and stepsisters and all that.
And your family now, how many kids do you have?
I have two boys.
Two boys? One the
one's
aspiring
14 and one's
11.
One just got a video camera for his 11th birthday.
Oh, nice.
And he has the Nerdy Kid. He wanted me to plug it. It's the Nerdy Kid, and he has a YouTube station. He has some gaming stuff, but some of it's about comics, and now he's videotaping everything we do and our life as being artists and traveling. So early in the morning, don't pick your nose. Look around.
Yeah. Make sure
nobody's watching.
Look for that little red dot. In the dark corner.
Yeah.
So tell me again what his YouTube channel is.
It's the Nerdy Kid, but really know.
I'll pull it up and I'll link it. Yeah,
yeah,
tell
Ben
he's
Fisher.
A free plug.
Yep, and his Facebook thing is Ben the Man Fisher.
And if he starts getting more and more hits, I'm gonna hit him up for some sponsorship money.
There you go.
Speaking of which, you get more business. We're at Gabby's Kitchen in Chino, so come over, eat breakfast, order a Reuben. They haul a Reuben out when you order it.
They're very friendly and they fill your coffee right on time.
Spot.
And
I
your
like
water.
It. I like Jimmy. Jimmy and Kelly, the owners of Gabby's. And they got good coffee. So let's get, kind of run me through your history then. So you back and forth to Pennsylvania, you started, what was the first piece of art that you sold? Do you remember?
It was probably... Oh, well, can I tell you the story about how you should never use your children's pottery as ashtrays? Because in high school in Pennsylvania, we had Mrs. Stremba, who's an amazing artist, and that was in Morgantown at Twin Valley. And every person, she only had one pottery wheel, and every person got a half hour on the pottery wheel, in which point we're supposed to make four pieces of pottery. Now, I developed an after-school program called Mud Puppies, where I center the piece, but I taught everybody how to make the pottery, but I assist them. I do not create it. And that's kind of what Miss Stremba did, because, you know, you've got 23 kids in the classroom in a half hour to make this pottery. So she'd be there next to you, and the pot would start raising, and then she'd turn around to yell at someone, and it'd go, and it would be flat again. But finally, after that half hour, that was like another big clay experience, throwing on the wheel. And I made these four pots, and then I glazed them, and they got all speckly and pretty. And I remember bringing them home to my mom and being like, look at these. I made these. And her taking her cigarette and going, oh, that's lovely, honey. An ashtray. And tapping it in there. That is not something you do, and I would
crush
never let my
spirit.
Children make ashtrays in any of my classes. Yes. But the first piece I sold, I'm trying to figure out. I know there was a dolphin that had speckles on it. I know I went to Kutztown University in Pennsylvania, and I made this vase that looked like the birth of Venus, and actually an antique collector bought it, and I guess I was 21 or something like that. I do comical stuff and dark humor stuff that might be inappropriate, like droids getting together and all kinds of stuff. But I also do horses and Native American stuff. And it's funny because a lot of the artwork I made in Pennsylvania before I moved out here already looks like it belongs here just because it was my mindset.
Yeah.
And I paint with a lot of color. I just constantly paint all day. That's what I do.
Now, I am not, other than photography as a business and an art form, I'm not well-versed in visual arts. Painting, I know what I like if I see something, and some of the old masters and the famous artists I can recognize, you mentioned earlier.
But they
earlier.
Don't speak to you.
Well, no, I like them. I don't know enough about them. I haven't mm-hmm. studied any art history or anything. So I'm going to ask you this question, knowing as you answer, I will probably not know what you're talking about.
Sure.
Who were your influences in both painting and pottery and sculpture and stuff? Who
Charles
spoke to you?
Charles Birchfield. I've been known to paint a lot listening to Jimi Hendrix and the Beastie Boys.
Okay, those I know.
Right? Charles Birchfield, I enjoy... One thing I like about Van Gogh, which I really, like I said, I'm not condoning his lifestyle. I'm not... I really have a thing, and I've spoken to other artists about it, and I get into controversial discussions, is his brother enabled him, is the way I see it. I mean, here I am with two kids. I worked as a crisis counselor in a psychiatric hospital. I taught in the school districts. I developed my after-school program. I did all this stuff to make a living so that I wound up eventually doing art full-time. But the story with Van Gogh is he was hooked on, it was either absinthe or opium, and his brother, he'd have no money, and his brother would bail him out, but they still weren't helping him. They were like, here's the money to live, you go do what you're doing. Not only did he not have the support and the support system of being an artist and that he can make it, but nobody was helping him keep it, you know, he was demising, and they were paying for it. Like, just the same way I wouldn't enable a husband to be a drinker, like, and ruin his life, and I wouldn't enable my children to flunk out of college, then I'm not paying for it, you know. I feel like he was kind of enabled, yet he was a pretty amazing artist, and I haven't been there, but in France, they have under glass his canvas, or his palette, and you can see the pressure and the ruining of all the brushes and the mess where all his colors and his ideas mix together, and it looks like a big, passionate mess. So the fact that you don't have this background in art and art history and this and that, I will tell you, like, I break the rules. All the same things they told us in college, and I went to school for art education, art therapy, and fine arts. They, you know, tell you don't put a black outline on anything if you want to, you know, black, you're making a coloring book, or they tell you about value studies and the focal points and what colors and value. Like, I learned all of that traditional stuff, but if I make stuff like that, it does nothing for me. I don't feel like I'm connected to it. Like, I'm pretty much, I get an idea, I get a vision, I sit down and I hash it out.
Was that traditional structure training, do you feel that that's necessary at least to get you in the right area, then you can express yourself? Or do you feel that great artists can develop on their own without any structure?
I think that they can. I believe that they can. I had a friend who's actually a carpenter, and my husband worked for him. He does great. He knew he wanted to be a carpenter at 5. He got his first hammer. And he was valedictorian of his school, and he stood up and said, you don't have to go to college to quit making your parents pressure you. You know, I went to college for a long time and learned a lot of different things, but it doesn't mean that that's the way you become an artist. It speaks to you. The most disappointing thing I saw, and I just did some shows at Eck House, which is the college gallery at Kutztown, and I'm really fortunate, and I feel great because even though I'm not teaching a lot of children anymore, the college girls came to me for advice because they see that I move and I shake and I sell stuff. So now I'm kind of mentoring some of the college girls. And one of the first conversations I had with them is, like, some of their parents were like, oh, that's great. You know, why don't you design some greeting cards and call Hallmark, or, you know, how can you use this in life? Like, maybe you'll just be a hostess and do art on the side, get married. Like, to talk to these people, like, don't let anybody tell your brain that you can't make a serious living being a creator. You know, we're all creating and manifesting our life. Some people pray, some people focus really hard and work hard to shoot at the goal or kick the goal, but you're manifesting your life in an art form in every single way. It doesn't just have to be painting.
How do you find a balance between the business end and making a living as an artist and the true art form? And I'm sure you've heard this before, I have, when it comes to photography, is when people see you pursuing the business end, they almost view that as being a sellout.
I don't care. Let them.
Well, how do you find, the balance between doing something just for the money and doing something to express yourself? Because it can be hard. On the photo end, weddings paid the bills for many years, and I hate shooting weddings.
And you wanted to stab yourself in the eyeball
with a fork.
Yeah, I was doing
50, 60 a year. And when you consider they're just on weekends and typically April to September, April to October, I was doing 4 and 5 a weekend. I hated it, but it allowed me to pay the bills.
Yeah, those are your moments of service. Mm. You know, I think I'm 40 now. I'm 40 now, and I always knew I wanted to do this, and I've always been. And I mean, yeah. I was an entrepreneur following the Grateful Dead. I would spend $30 on Quaker oats and raisins, not the other kind of cookies, I swear to God. But I would spend $30 on oats and raisins and stuff and make vegan oatmeal cookies and turn around and sell 150 of them. And then I'd save 30 to make another.
Yeah.
Because there was no way my parents were going to pay for me to go running around doing that. And let me just say, I still got straight A's while I was doing that. But the balance between that, I got off on that subject. So I was always kind of entrepreneur about it.
I think those other cookies were kicking it. No.
No, I'm too old for that. I'll just eat. one of the struggles the only really real big struggle I have about pricing my value right now, where I get a little wonky, is when I sell artwork to my friends. Because people really do appreciate it, but sometimes those friends, I don't know if they feel that they're doing me a favor.
Yeah.
And I get a little, like, I give them a good deal, but then, that always makes me feel like, am I giving them too good of a deal because they're my friend? But they are. As far as being an entrepreneur and giving things away for free, that'll come back to this event. It benefits Yavapai Food Bank and Humane Society. Sometimes you just want the art out, and if you haven't marketed or found the right niche or venue, sometimes I donate things. I did a big show at the Humane Society and donated an $800 piece because it needs to be out there, and I don't pay. This is how I do it. I don't pay for advertising. I'll pay $40 for the business cards that I designed, but I don't run around paying people to run my stuff for me. So if I'm going to give something away and it's good for a good cause and it puts my name up in the headlights, it's helping someone and it's helping me.
So it kind of goes to that same statement about breaking the rules. There's really no hard and fast rules. If you're comfortable with it and if you feel it's going to benefit a cause or you, then you'll make that decision on a case basis.
For instance, it's really important, and I told the kids I mentored at the college, to be true to yourself. I just wrote a children's book about why I don't feel that killer whales should be in captivity. Come on, folks. They're eating the trainers. They're eating them. Like, they don't care if you're a surfboard or... Yeah. You know, what a seal or a human, they're eating the trainers and they're getting mistreated. And I feel strongly about this. So I did all these whale paintings and I put a book together and I'm working on publishing it. And I thought about it, and I'm doing a lot of stuff in California these days. And I was like, well, maybe I'll approach. I would never approach SeaWorld. My money side of me was like, well, you know, SeaWorld could sell that stuff. I'm not supporting, like, so, you know, there's a truth in the matter of I'm not going to go against what I believe in for the whales there. However, if a couple was getting married and they wanted me to paint a portrait at their wedding or something like that, you know, it may not be the funnest, most free-spirited situation where I can completely just unleash myself. But to me, that service, it's kind of like paying your dues. Like,
speaking of service, there's great service here at Gabby's.
That's right.
Thanks for the coffee.
Yes.
I get that a lot. People will, you get friends that approach you for work and others that are acquaintances more.
Yeah.
I'll get emails or calls. Hey, what do you charge for this? Well, my prices are on my website.
Yeah.
They'll look at it and go, oh, yeah, I saw that. Well, how much would you charge me for this? And after three or four messages or three or four phone calls, it just boils down to, I know what you charge, but what are you going to charge me?
Oh, how about this?
I get that a lot.
You will get some great exposure.
Yeah.
Which I am all for exposure, like the event that we're going to be talking about upcoming. That's exposure because I just moved home, and I'm exposing myself to learn about other artists and musicians.
Get reinserted into the local community.
That's exposure by my choice. No artist that is serious really wants to hear that we're going to get some more exposure. Yeah. Like, you choose to expose yourself when you do, when you're comfortable.
Yeah.
That's when you do it.
How did that work with, what kind of ways did you promote your band when you were playing seriously?
Well, I'd have art shows. Actually, the 4th Street Cafe in Morgantown is owned by Her family, I went to high school with her, Heather Herlock. She's in a band called Tin Bird Choir. It's her and her husband. They're amazing. She has the voice of an angel. But her parents, after all these years, opened up a cafe. And I was Artist of the Month for December, and I booked my band for the first Friday in December. So a lot of times when I have big, and I had like 300 pieces. I had like 100 pieces of wall stuff and 200 pieces of pottery, and I highly advertised it and told people where it was, but then also my band was
cross promotion for both.
Yeah, yeah, sometimes that makes me insane a little bit when I'm people are buying my stuff off the walls and my husband's helping and I'm singing and I want to be like, yeah, I made that piece, blah 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 blah, and I'm like, no. So a lot of times with the music I would cross promote in that sense, and I'm part of my music persona. I play harmonica and I sing lead usually, but I like vocals and backgrounds. Is I'm the warm fuzzy person. Like everybody in the band could possibly be the warm fuzzy person, but it's just part of my personality and nature to run out and say, oh, I'm glad you can make it, and give someone a hug and kind of entice them to be part of what we're doing. It's kind of just, I think it's part of the whole persona of being that. You're warm. You're singing, you're using your voice, and you're warm.
This was your band here?
That was Rubus, R-U-B-U-S, which is like the clinical name for BlackBerry, because the other guy in my band, Eric Miller, was the banjo player, and he worked for this state. He was the game commissioner for the area, so he knew all the technical terms for stuff. Ed Yeager was my rhythm guitarist, and sometimes my husband would play if I let him.
I want to talk a little bit about music, and we want to talk about some of the open mics locally, then we'll get into this program. But, and I hate doing this because I usually don't, I'm going to take a little break here real quick.
Please do.
And in case you're wondering, the restrooms at Gabby's Kitchen, Chino Valley, are down the hallway and to the right. Now, back to the show.
$500 for artwork, and I'm playing... Yay! She's there! Woohoo! Wiring me money! I like it! See?
The perfect marriage between business and art just happened before our
very eyes. I hate to crawl up your butt, but are you doing that? You want me to send this stuff I made for you?
Let's get back to music a little bit. Who, with, would you say Rubus?
Rubus,
with
yes.
Rubus, and with your solo playing, and with you just in general playing music, who are some of your musical influences?
Well, it started with the Grateful Dead, because I followed the Dead, and those were songs that I knew, and I more liked the bluegrassy sound, not the rocky sound. Now I'm very bluesy. It's because those are the harps that I play most. I wasn't like trained or take lessons, so I'm always G and D harp mostly. So it's more bluesy, but the Grateful Dead, Blues Traveler, we played... My first band, Shake House, was so cool, and it was a husband and wife team, and she played the flute like Jethro Tull. She was amazing, and he was rhythm guitarist. But we took songs like by the Sugar Cubes. I don't know if you know who that was. They're like punk band from the 80s. Bjork was in it before she became Bjork.
Gotcha.
And we took totally crazy, demented songs and made them like... classy bluegrass songs and twisted
mainly acoustic.
It was,
what you play?
He played electric. I like acoustic. My other band that I was in was Pharmonica, and I played with Rick. What's Rick's last name? Richard Strock, and his father is a classical pianist and gospel singer. But Rick was 26, and I would play with Rick everywhere, and he was a he liked a lot of bluegrass, and we had a band called Shake. Harmonica, and at one point we had a mandolin player, my husband, a drummer, rhythm guitarist, and me on voice and harmonica, and Rick and I would take turns in songs, and he wrote some amazing songs with his grandpa, and I was fortunate enough to get, I can't take them with me because he wrote them, I have to ask permission, but he wrote some amazing bluegrass songs, and I grew up on like Waylon Jennings and Jesse Coulter and Willie Nelson. My dad actually was Glen Campbell's carpenter. I got to sing when I was like 13 at Glen Campbell's 50th birthday party with Ricky Skaggs and Glen Campbell.
Oh my goodness.
And this is where I stopped singing for a while. I picked a Whitney Houston song. I'm sitting there with like Bluegrass
the
Mania,
legend,
and I picked Whitney Houston because I was a teen
and that was,
fried
what
my
was
brain.
On the list at that point.
So, but I like bluesy bluegrass mostly. Yeah. I'll play rock songs. I play some Jewel and some other stuff. I've just met Tyler. His last name starts with a C, but I just met him, and he lives off of Viewpoint and has a child of his own and has a full-time job and is in a heavy metal band, but put an ad out looking for something different.
Yeah.
And I just showed up and we just hit it off and already writing originals and we picked four songs. So I'm going to hope to drag him if he's not working to those open mics at Bricks and Bones.
Well, I'll have to double check.
Cage.
The Birdcage on Tuesday nights has a great, I sat in there a couple episodes ago. I talked with one of the musicians, David Portolano. And that's a weird mix, not in a bad way weird, an interesting mix of art and music, spoken word, some poetry.
Yeah.
They bring out easels, they paint.
I love it.
They're in the bar. It's a really interesting
eclectic
and fun little group. Yeah, eclectic group. That's on Tuesdays. On Thursdays, one of the premier musicians in the area, Don Cheek, runs the open mic at the Birdcage also Thursday nights.
Okay.
Strictly music. Last week I sat down with a Chino Valley aspiring musician who Dale Long, who's starting an open mic at the Rocking Horse in Prescott Valley.
Okay.
Right on the highway. He'll be doing that every Sunday evening. And I think, I'm not positive, but I think Brick and Bones does an open mic on Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
So these are all spots, Rockin' Horse, Birdcage,
Brick and Bones is Wednesday.
That's the old Coyote Joe's.
Okay.
Right there just south of the courthouse on Whiskey Row.
Yeah, so.
But there's a lot of great music, a lot of good open mics for people to get in there and stretch their muscles and try out some new stuff. And then, of course,
it doesn't hurt. It doesn't hurt to just go out there and try and get your voice on, get your sing on, bring out your fiddle from high school, you know, see what happens.
What do you enjoy playing? Are you mixing in some more originals when you play now, or are you... Is that still in the infancy
stage?
We
just met, so we made four. We did a Blues Traveler song, a Jewel song, a House of the Rising Sun, and a Grateful Dead song. And then he started sending me his music, and I'm writing some lyrics. And then I gave him some of my lyrics. My old roommate in Pennsylvania, Patty McCabe, was in Knoxbridge Band, and she's like a singer-songwriter, and she's totally self-sufficient. She can have a whole band behind her or just stand there and wail and do her thing. And she's kind of like a country rock. So I wrote some songs just living with her. They'd have band practice on Thursdays, and I'd be doing dishes, and they'd be playing a riff, and I'm like, I just take my wet hands and write on a paper towel, like, lyrics. So I was fortunate to be in that. Like my house, I said, is mainly art, visual arts, and my last experience before I left Pennsylvania was getting to live with some musicians and just throw it out there all the time.
Now, you mentioned you're just... got back into town. You're still unpacking.
At the beginning of the month, I took my minivan with two dogs, two wolf dogs, and two cats, and two children, and traveled across the country to get here to my friend's house in Chino. And then I had an art show at the Fremont Country Club in Vegas and jumped on a Greyhound and packed up my artwork in like $50 worth of bubble wrap and stuff and got to the art show in Vegas. Totally imposed myself on an Indian artist that lives on the res and said, you need to take my artwork back to the res. I'll come get it when I have time. So it's still there. And then I went and took a Greyhound bus, which was totally the most annoying thing I've done in a long time and uncomfortable. Took the Greyhound from Vegas to Pennsylvania, picked up my husband, my two horses, and my stuff, and drove home. So I literally haven't even been home seriously a week, and I'm already running, you know, part of this show and trying to get my stuff out there because that's how I roll.
Once you roll.
Yeah.
Once you get your feet planted a little bit and start unpacking your supplies and clearing out that harmonica, I think you need to Tuesday nights. Is designed for you.
I can play. Yes.
They had you in mind when they set up this this art and music open mic at the Birdcage Tuesday nights. I think you need to get over.
We've been an inch away, but like I said, I was waiting for that girl to call me. This she's a model in Florida, in Orlando, and I have my website, but I just tore it down to rebuild it, and that's my struggle, like learning technology for myself, and that's part of me being an independent artist and not giving someone 40% all the time. So I'm learning my own website, but I do sell a lot on Facebook when I post, and this lady in Orlando is a model, and she had me do a giraffe for her mother, and then a tiger, an elephant, and a fox for her teen daughter and told me personalities of each. I asked, because that's how I am, and yeah. I asked the personalities of the kids, and they're a surprise painting for her family members. And so I worked on those, and I got them all packed up, and she's paying me because she doesn't do banks, which I don't blame her, because I did want to say, when I traveled across the country, my bank thought I had fraud. So I had two kids.
Different states, charges for
they
gas.
And, yeah. So I was stuck at a truck stop with two dogs, two cats, and two kids with no money till I had to wait till my credit union opened at 8 a.m. And then the next night they did the same thing in Tulsa. And it was horrible. So I can understand why people don't want to use them sometimes.
I don't use banks because... What would you?
I was just thinking about sponsors that might be.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Nobody listens to this. We're okay. I'm the same way with banks, but it's for a different reason. I don't put money in them because I don't have any money. So it's a wholly different reason. My wife and I were traveling to California back. This is a few years back, and we had just switched banks, and we stopped in Button Willow, I think is the name of the little off-ramp. It's not even a town. I think it's just an off-ramp. But I'm gassing up, and as I'm gassing up, my cell phone rings, and what I assume is a telemarketer. It's a 800 number. Which I normally wouldn't answer, but I answered it.
Yeah.
Figuring, I've been on the road for 12 hours.
Give you someone to yell at.
Yell at. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was my bank asking where I was if I was in Button Willow, California, because we have an Arizona address. And we were brand new to the bank. It was right after we
moved.
They
should call you, though.
And it was nice. It was like, yeah, I'm gassing up right now. Okay, we just received a charge request, and we wanted to make sure it was you, which, one, made me feel very safe that somebody was watching out for me, and also made me, like you said, with your son, don't pick your nose early in the morning because you don't have the cameras on. I started looking around, like, okay, who's watching? This is Big Brother at its finest.
Right.
And then I started thinking, okay, what else have I charged that I really don't want people to know about? And fortunately, I didn't think of anything. But I pay all that with money orders. No.
Right? That's why you have a mattress sash. Yes.
But yeah, it was halfway reassuring and halfway very creepy to know I was being monitored that close. But like I said, it's doesn't come into play if you don't have any money in the bank. So I feel safe. I often hope somebody will steal my identity and maybe raise my credit rating a little bit with the new identity. Because it can't get much worse.
We're waiting to buy. We need to wait at least a year. So we're fortunate. We're living. There's two houses on the property, and we've got our horses.
Oh, nice.
And since last time I was in Chino, the water supply went down. So I'm in charge of buying the water tanks because I have the critters that need to drink the water. I'm in charge of buying water tanks and groceries, and we kind of are remodeling.
Now, being your two kids and your husband.
And my husband, Chris, he had this great remodeling job in Paoli, Pennsylvania, and was doing mansions and stuff right before we left. But he's also an artist. My pottery is more whimsical, and I put glass in it, and it's shiny and sparkly and dragonflies. His is very utilitarian and functional and symmetrical, and he does a little bit of painting, but he does some amazing pottery and found object art. And he's also a builder, so he can put any...
Yeah.
He can do my shadow boxes and my frames. He's in charge of hanging all my art. I just go there, there, and there. And then I go, you know, talk to people. So he kind of didn't know he was an artist till he was in Pennsylvania. And when I went through my divorce with my two boys, I lived in Williamson Valley 7 years ago. And he moved across the country. He had wanderlust and was in Pennsylvania his whole life and moved across the country and moved in with me. And I had an apartment underneath me in case it didn't work out. But he was my apprentice. He grew so, like, excited about pottery. And I fired him three times. And he kept coming to work. He asked me some question one day why I do this and not that, and I was just like, here's the door, and he showed he kept coming. So he's got his own style, and he makes like coffee mugs and pictures.
Oh, nice.
He's very, and I can make those things. Like, I was traditionally trained in art and, you know, visual painting and clay, but I'm more like whimsical, go by what I feel.
Gotcha.
And what he feels, because of the way his mindset is more structured and balanced. And
and music as well?
Yes, he's a rhythm guitarist, but he's looking for a bass right now, but he's also a rhythm guitarist, and he goes more for the bluegrass like stuff. I'm very bluesy, and I like to change everything all the time. I like to poke the bear.
Well, we look forward to hearing some music. Let's talk from you. I'm going to be cruising those open mics looking for more interview subjects. So I'm hoping to hear you play shortly. And let me throw this out. This is a shameless plug for myself.
Yes.
We'll talk a little bit about how you and I hooked up. We met for the first time about an hour ago as you walked into the restaurant here.
Gabby's
Kitchen near the roundabout in Chino Valley, who has great coffee. We met online, basically through Facebook and through a mutual friend, Ken Hedler, local journalist from here who's now in Utah and parts unknown as Ken looks for a new home. But it was a suggestion from mutual friends that we talk to get this interview set up. So I want to throw that out to anybody listening to this. Go to milehighshow.com, the contact page, and suggest who you think the community needs to know about so we can get some artists, some writers, some interesting characters. There doesn't even have to be, this isn't an art podcast, it's not a music podcast, it's not a comedy podcast. It's basically a forum for me to get out of the house when my wife gets tired of me, but to go out and meet new folks and introduce new folks to the community and different talents. And there are quite a few folks locally who have great stories to tell.
Danny, and they deserve Danny, to.
Yeah, we want to hear about them.
Yeah.
And again, it's if it's not, if I don't have people to interview, it's just me driving around in my van talking to myself, and that doesn't end well.
Well, it's part of, like, it's not even selfish, but it's the same way I run art shows. Like, I have like 90 paintings right now ready to go at any moment. I just got in this big place, 3,000 square feet. I can go and I can bring my crew of people, or I can bring two or three other artists who have their own group of people so that there's choices. Like, the best thing you could do at a farmer's market is have one stand with cantaloupe and lettuce, and right across from it a stand with cantaloupe, corn, and lettuce. And people, like, it helps people have choices and flow freely.
And learn new things, learn about new folks. One of the ways that that our area here in the quad, tri, whatever we want to call it, cities area, we're going to get a chance to look at some art from local artists, and that's going to be what? What's the project that you're involved
We're calling
with?
It The Scene. There's now a Facebook group page for the Tri-City Scene, but I guess it's Quad City nowadays. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah.
That's including Dewey Humboldt.
Dewey Humboldt. So I include Paulden in that, so we might be
the five-city scene.
Cinco cities.
I like it.
Because Paulden is where I moved from.
CCS.
I moved from a very, very small town in the San Francisco Bay Area of 150,000.
Ooh.
We were so small, we didn't even get on the weather map for the local news.
Ooh.
It would skip right over from Oakland to Fremont, San Jose. They skipped Hayward completely because we were too small. 150,000. I moved from there.
Kind of jealous to live in a small town near the ocean.
Well, I moved from there to Paulden of 3,500, I think, when we moved there.
Yeah.
It's a Chino suburb is Paulden. That's
I spent a lot of time in Ash Fork before I moved because...
I love Ash Fork.
There was a Vietnam vet. I had a couple of Vietnam vet friends that would come to my house in Chino and take showers, and I made friends with them. But that was an amazing area. They all have like 20-acre lots out there, and one guy taught me raku pottery, which is like a very finite...
What did it say that again?
Raku pottery is what the Japanese use...
I heard raccoon.
No, we were making pottery out of dead raccoon carcasses.
Out of roadkill.
No, but I learned a lot in Ash Fork, and it was a great place. And now I didn't even realize the last time I lived here that whole 40, you can go from Flagstaff here. Like, that just clicked. And it's the best way to go.
That's the route we take when we go back home, back to our former home in California. Is the 40 down into whatever highway that is to Bakersfield and up the 5. But I don't know why. I love pulling off and driving through Ash Fork. I like driving through Seligman. It's that old Route 66 kind of feel.
Yeah.
That was gone before I was around, so, you know.
Did you ever go to Crown King before it had the fire? That's fun. You got to. You need a four-wheeler to get out there, but that's some fun stuff.
But little off back roads, and that's kind of another theme of the podcast, is get off the beaten path and interview and talk to the folks that may not normally have a forum, whether it be radio or TV or something, just to kind of get to know who's out and about.
There's all this valuable information just right here. And I'm glad it's not like if you drive through certain intersections in Phoenix, when I used to live out that way, you'd see the same people at the intersection, at the stoplight every day, and you never smiled or wove, or, you know, nobody really got to know each other. Like, we don't need to be that way.
Yeah, it's fun. There's a lot of interesting characters around. Now, I swear we're going to get to this art.
It's all relevant.
But something else popped in my head. You had some radio background as well.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about what the focus of that show was. We talked a little bit about it before we plugged in the mics. Mm-hmm. It was creativity in a lot of different forms.
It's basically manifesting your life is a creative spirit. And having everybody understand that art and music is not just for right-brained people, that all this stuff is connected and it's what makes the world around. We need our accounting people. We need, you know, our structured people. We need our nurses. But nursing is an art form. It's the art form of caring for people. So what happened was Alfonso Todd he's the owner of prolific.com, and he had Alfonso Todd and Associates in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And I had a time where I was teaching a lot. I closed my gallery and I was home taking care of my own kids because they needed me. It was really frustrating teaching all those classes and having your own kids need you.
Cobbler's kids have no shoes type of thing.
They weren't getting.
Yeah.
We were in the gallery all day, which it was awesome. And we had a room full of hula hoops and roller skates and stuff, but my kids were indoors all day.
Yeah.
So we made the change, and I kind of mourned it because I was kind of, you know, a public eye. I ran all these festivals, and when I stopped, it stopped. And I felt, like, lonely and sad about it. So eventually, I started networking again and collaborated with Alfonso Todd. And I came into his office, and I have a feeling, because we lived on a trailer on 30 acres, and I paid really cheap rent, but I lived in a crappy little trailer on a big lot of land next to a mountain preserve. And he knew this from my Facebook postings and everything. And I think he expected, like, someone to come in and, like, you know, all shy and, like, discombobulated and wanting a chance to do something with their art that they do in their, you know, in the bathroom or something. And I came in and I'm just like, here's what I do, blah, 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 blah. And he was like, oh, my God, you want your own show? So what I did, and then we started getting sponsors, but then I stopped going. I quit because it wasn't the format completely that I wanted working for that place. They were more corporate, and I was really about just bringing it out.
More traditional radio as opposed to...
Yeah, and I was getting sponsors. Form. Like, I was there 6 months, so I was starting getting sponsors, but I wanted to find something else.
What was
the
basis of the show? What did you do?
I took a visual artist, a musician, and then someone, any other art form, whether they made wine, if they were a nurse, if they owned a restaurant, if they were an accountant. Like, I would take people and talk about their talents and how they manifest creativity in their lives and the struggles. They got to promote themselves and say, this is my website, here's where I'll be, this is my next show is going to be here. They got to perform, the musicians got to perform live or with, you know, a disc. And I quizzed them a lot about their journey. When did they realize they wanted to be an artist or a musician or a nurse or a carpenter? And also, what obstacles did they overcome and how they overcame that? And I think I did that a lot just from my own... It was cathartic because there is always those voices that cause you to second guess yourself of people that love you and that are concerned, but not everybody's mindset understands that being creative and being a creator, like, works, and that it's not just for artists and musicians. It's everybody. It's the way you live your life. It's kind of like your mantra, and people don't even realize they're doing it. There's a guy, there's a movie on Netflix called Buck, and he was an abused child, and he was kind of a tortured soul, and he became this amazing horse trainer, and he helps people every day with their horses, but he's also like a spiritual person that's helping people, and it doesn't matter if you're an artist and musician. I kind of talked to people about their journey, what they doubted and didn't doubt about their things and the successes they overcame and what advice they would give to someone else trying something new. It may not be art or music, but what would you tell someone else that's going out of their comfort zone into a new realm because their heart tells them to? What's some advice that you would give them?
Give me some. What is some of the advice that you would give? Well, you've spent time as as a teacher, as an artist, at the business end of art, and obviously time as a mother. How do you... Give me advice. I've got a five-year-old at home. Give me advice on how to foster
that. When I ran my gallery and my studio, I just had a new marriage. You know, I had my new husband. We opened up this gallery in Boyertown, which I didn't know it was the KKK capital of it. You know, like,
I still think you missed the boat on, the decorating the hood.
I don't want any money from that kind of crap. But, yeah, that's rotten money. That's like the whale money at SeaWorld. SeaWorld. So
knock that off my list of future sponsors.
So a couple of things is, when I started the business, I in my heart always wanted to make more artwork, but I became so immersed in helping special needs children and helping people with therapy. Like, I became a teacher and I developed this great thing and I became proud, but it became that point. Like, our first year we broke even. The second year we cleared we grossed over $100,000, but I cleared $48,000 on my second year in business of owning a gallery and a studio. Like, that's
huge.
That's amazing. Yeah. But I knew what I was doing. I was bringing people in from New Jersey and Philly coming to take my wheel and wine classes. They'd come and we'd do a BYOB and they'd, adults would come and make pottery and we'd have all these awesome events and we were supporting the schools. So we ran after school programs in the schools that were parent paid. So I had a ton of money coming in. I grew very fast. And I hired on employees and learned what to do and what not to do with employees. And the whole time I'm sitting there going, when do I get to finish my damn painting?
Yeah.
You know, and the whole process was a really good learning experience, and I made it work, and we made money off of it, but definitely to be true to yourself. And something I learned from that moment, like I said, I couldn't take care of my own kids, but I could take care of everybody else's kids, is even when money is getting handed, we have such a value on money and survival, and it's important, and it's very important, you know, and money is art, and money is a game, and the way you work with it, it's part of your entrepreneurship, and the way you weave your way around the world. Willie Nelson, let's not talk about his taxes, but he's got plenty of money. He adopted 200 Mustangs and has a Mustang ranch. You know, like, money is a way to weave more good in the world, if you look at it that way. And at one point, I didn't know how to tell the money to stop to take care of heart matters. So one thing, I guess, is to be truthful at all times, not to bend or fold for that hope of that money, but to earn it like we were all hopefully raised honestly. You make an honest living off of it, no matter what it is, you know. If somebody wanted to buy one of my, you know, 11 by 14 paintings for $6,000, I can't say that I'd turn it down or anything, but honestly, like, that's kind of insane. I work hard and I make paintings and I make prints and I want people to buy them for a reasonable price, and that's the way I feel better about myself, being honest. Doing things the honest way.
That's encouraging to hear, because a lot of times, and maybe this is from a different generation of artists, but it was the thinking that the business end would detract from the art end, and to find the marriage of those two, the business and the artistic end, to where they can benefit each other is good to hear. Because for a lot of years and a lot of generations, it was no. The art has to be separate, or it'll be corrupted, it'll be influenced, and we all need to survive.
I'd like to determine that my art isn't used for corruption.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's still my baby. You know, I'm giving it away. I'm giving away things that are a piece of me, which I find value in. If I'm going to spend that time to give it away, yes, I'm not going to do this just for exposure. Yeah. I want an exchange. If the exchange is monetary, if the exchange is you give me your music CD and I give you a clay owl, that's still an exchange. Yeah. It's a mutual exchange.
And I got a clay owl.
Yes, you
did. I got a nice owly.
They're just little samples. They're quick little samples. Those are actually what I was saying about the guy I learned in Ash Fork, Raku Pottery. It's an outdoor kiln where I get to play with fire. And the bottoms are black from the smoke. And the Japanese say that's a gift from the artist's soul to the person who gets it.
Interesting.
Yeah. So that was one of the things. And also all those people that cause you to not have the mindset that you can actually be successful in whatever career, art, music, acting, whatever. It's a part about being honest, but those people that try to get you to second guess yourself, some people say, oh, you know, forget them. Who cares? Don't listen to them. Break the rules. That's great. But I always tried to take the empathetic side and the compassionate side, knowing that they're doing that because they're worried, feeling sorry for them because they don't understand that it's possible, but also accepting that the only reason they were trying to treat me this way was because they're worried. And that was more for mentoring these college girls at the art gallery. Your parents love you, but they really, like, it's, you should look at them with a little compassion because it's sad that they don't know.
Yeah.
You know?
It's hard to find that balance, and it seems like you, it sounds like you have, you've gotten there.
Constantly tested.
Yeah. You know, we are almost an hour into this. We better start the
show. Okay.
We have to start this podcast eventually. Let's start it.
Okay.
Now.
Well, right now it's the Tri-City scene, right? The event is on Friday and Saturday, April 24th and 25th. It's right outside of Harkins Theater. There's over 20 art and music
vendors. That is at the ED, or the Entertainment District in Prescott Valley, Glassford and 69. The restaurants, the theater's probably the focal point there, I think, the Harkins Theater.
Yeah, the theater's right there.
What's going to be there? What can we expect to see?
There's
when
at least
up?
20 vendors going from art to music to food. Now, we're not having any Mexican food vendors because Garcia's is right there, and we're all working together here, so we're wanting to make it a fair exchange. Tell me the name of that fun place again.
Freedom Station.
Freedom Station is offering 15% off that day to people, and we're using their restrooms, so they're offering their area. We have at least 20 vendors of artists, music, and food. We do have a place for a PA stand, so we're doing an artist call. It's free for artists this time. Bring your table and set up. You have a 10x10 space. There's security provided at nighttime. There's also some RV parking for travelers. All we ask is, it's a free event and it's free for vendors, but you bring either canned food or dog food, or, you know, some kind of pet food. It's mm-hmm. for the Yavapai. The entire thing is for the Yavapai Food Bank and Yavapai Humane Society. So,
and
just
again,
bring
give
something.
Me those dates again.
April 24th and 25th, 10 to 6, Friday and Saturday. So we are looking for more musicians. You're welcome to sell your T-shirts and accept tips, all of that stuff. We have between 12 and 5 is the music time, and we have some bands coming. But just contact me, and I'll put you in the right direction to come set up. I do have some extra tables if they need tables. Come sell your wares, sell what you got, and bring a donation for the food bank for people food or animal food. That's what we're looking for.
To benefit the community, the four-legged and the two-legged variety of our community.
Yes, Kathy Day, the one that actually I inquired about the event, she just, you know, her whole thing is, we wanted to see more awareness and more action of celebrating the creative spirit in the community and having something right there where people are going to and from the movies, going to and from the fun thing. It's not costing anything. There's family-friendly music and gifts, and you don't have to pay a thing, but it sure would be cool if you took that old corn out of the back of your cabinet and brought it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
What else you want to hit? What are some subjects that we haven't touched on that you would like to talk about?
How are the skate parks doing here in this area?
Well, the Prescott Valley has a nice
huge
big one. The town of Chino is, as everybody knows, is broke. They're struggling financially on all fronts. We had a skate park.
You got
here,
a great pool, though.
Well, which is struggling.
No.
It's very tough. They were debating whether to open it this summer or not. But it not so much deciding on the pool. It was, these are all the projects we have. What can we afford to fund? And the pool got so much community backing and community support that was one they said, well, we're going to keep open no matter what. The council decided on that. It brought in some weird discussions because whether it's open or not, the town still has to pay for it because they took out the big loan to build it. Which,
or you're going to be skating in the pool.
Well, there was all kinds of different things decided, but one of the things, they had the little small skate park right there behind the community center by the ball fields, you know, near the pool. That was there for a number of years. The liability on the equipment there was so high they had to close it down a couple of years ago. They moved out the wooden ramps and things they had because the insurance companies were telling them, you know what, by just having it open, you're leaving yourself wide open
for
disaster. So they unfortunately had to close it, which took away one outlet for the youth in this area.
Mm-hmm.
But they had, and again, it comes into what we were talking about. I don't even know if it was on mic or not. But when you are given opportunities to accept money for grants and things,
yeah,
you're really restricted. A lot of times you're restricted on what you could use it for.
Mm-hmm.
They had some park impact fees that were collected through various taxes and through some state money. And I'm not the expert on this in no way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
But basically they were told you can only spend this on certain projects.
Yeah.
And one of them was to expand the park system. They couldn't use it to pay salaries. They couldn't use it on an existing park.
They couldn't revitalize it. They just had to expand it.
It had to be an expansion. So they took some of that money and contracted through California Skate Parks, who designs these huge skate and motocross parks. And they said, we'll pay you to design it. We have enough to get the design. We don't have enough
to
construct it. Exactly. And some people are saying, well, why are you doing that? Why don't you pave my road instead? Well, you don't understand. Even though it's town money, we have to use it for a specific thing. And they chose to, the skate park is a project. But in order to do, when they did that, a lot of the local contractors, Drake Cement out there
stepped in.
Well, what they said is, they said, well, we see that you're committed to the skate park by using the money to design it. We will help you build it. So in the last 6-8 months, the town has been soliciting contractors, suppliers, laborers that are going to donate the
hopefully
supplies.
They get a plaque or something.
Well, so it's a dance that the town had to do. It's like, well you're going to donate, you're going to dedicate this money to a park when we need roads, when we need this, when we need
so
this.
Step in.
So they're moving forward on getting it built. They're soliciting donations through the town hall and things. So hopefully this really premier skate park will get built strictly on donations, pretty much. So hopefully the community is going to get behind that. It looks like they will. The town is really working hard to get this built with little or no money spent.
I was shocked when I came home, just the main strip and the roundabout and all the action, and I was kind of almost overwhelmed. I'm like, are the pronghorns still here? I still see the antelope.
Yeah.
But also, I'm excited because where I lived, I was the only person with horses around. And if your horses got out, it was a big deal. And where I lived was kind of, I had to drive a little bit to get to any action. And I'm like, this is great because I can literally ride my horse to Alfonso's. Is it Alfonso's? The Mexican restaurant or the... It's a...
Which one? There's a...
Yeah, it's
the one there by the...
Yes, because they have Chili Relleno. Yes, because they have Chili Relleno burritos. So I really am making a trip as soon as I can to ride my horse to go get a Chili Relleno burrito. Yeah. That's what I'm going to go do.
Chino's an odd place. And in recent years, working with the town, I've come to appreciate a lot more of what we have here. It's a very diverse place.
Mm-hmm.
A good chunk of the community view it as a retirement community, but it's really not.
No, we have that's kind of how Prescott Valley was when I left, and it wasn't that long ago.
We have a large retired population, but there's also a vast chunk
families.
Of the population that are families, kids going to our schools and things. So it's a weird mix that I don't think a lot of people realize what's going on here. And unfortunately, cruising up and down the highway, we see a lot of empty storefronts. And part of the problem is where you can get water and sewer. A lot of the retailers, by their guidelines, won't come in unless they're tapped into a municipal water and sewer. They won't go into septic and well.
Why is that?
Because it's a liability. If they're maintaining the water and somebody gets sick from it, they want to have the ability to tap into.
Push that on someone else.
Yeah, kind of. So it's a weird problem to have. Is we've got space, we've got land, but there's a lot of companies that aren't willing to come in unless the infrastructure's there. And I don't think the population really realizes that. They say, well, we've got these empty storefronts. Why isn't somebody moving in?
Well, if nobody charges me rent, I'll go put a gallery in one with a porta potty and some sanitizing soap.
And that's another problem, too. Some of the rents up and down the highway are outrageous.
Yeah.
And because the properties aren't always owned by locals, they're owned by either corporations or people that are out of the area, and they go, well, this is what we charge for this space where I live, so this is what I'm going to charge for it here. When I had my photo studio here in town, I couldn't find anything that I could afford on the highway.
Yeah.
I did a warehouse space, and now I primarily do things out of my home because you can't afford the space here.
No, and that's like, as much as it's a pain in the butt as an artist to be a pop-up artist and run around, you know. Yeah. I joined some indie artist group, and I was like, what does indie even mean? And someone said, that means you're broke.
I've been indie for years. I didn't know it.
Right? I'm not sure it means independent, but
yeah.
Apparently you can be broke if you don't do it right. But running around doing pop-up shows, like I approach restaurants. There's this little awesome microbrewery in Reading, Pennsylvania called Mike's Tavern, and it's beef jerky and knickknacks sitting all over the place, and all it is like really good IPAs, and blue-collar men come there after work, have a couple of beers. I sell so much artwork there.
Nice.
And he takes no commission. And then I spend it on beer. but he takes no commission. And like, what I've learned is, you know, I'm already eyeing up places that, how would you like me to have a pop-up show here, you know, art show here, and my band plays. Like, sometimes, like you said, the overhead and the rent of having this particular place and then having to be there all day long waiting for one person is kind of annoying too. So I'm taking it as I'm going to run around and say, I'll help your business, you help me have a place.
Good trade-off. Well, let's plug you again. How do people reach you, Danny Fisher, the artist and musician?
Danny Fisher is on Facebook. I'm not, and I think it's just a big picture of my face right now. And then
you're upside down.
Yeah, I'm upside down. And then the background is me teaching kids pottery. But I'm on Facebook under Danny Fisher. My website is dannyfisher.gallery, dannyfisher.gallery. My email is Hal and Hands, because I love wolves and coyotes. howlinhands@hotmail.com. And
still rocking that Hotmail address. I like it.
I've had it forever. I don't want to change it. Every now and then I'll get a long lost friend. I still have
it. You've got a Gmail on there too, I think.
Yeah, I hardly ever use it.
Yeah.
610-823-3742. And this event on Facebook,
plug
it's an
it
open event. It is called the Prescott Valley Scene. It is Friday and Saturday, April 24th and 25th. We're still looking for vendors and musicians. 10 to 6. Bring a canned food or a pet food. It's free.
Or a box of them if you are so inclined.
Food.
There's no limit. You won't turn anybody away because they brought too many canned goods?
No, we're really wanting to see community support for this cause and come out and check out the great vendors. In your area, there's at least 20 there.
Great.
I will be there selling artwork and pottery and possibly singing. So.
Possibly singing and blowing that harmonica.
Yes.
Plug your son's YouTube channel again.
Nerdy Kid. I think it's just nerdykid.com.
I'll find it and I'll link it.
Yep. His name is Ben Fisher. On Facebook, he's Ben the Man Fisher.
And please hit milehighshow.com on the contact page and let us know. Let us. I keep saying us. It's just me. It's some lonely guy driving around in a van with a microphone trying to interview people. But let me, through the contact page, know who you think would be good either people to interview or locations to interview from. Because I want to promote local restaurants, bars, coffee shops, bakeries, musicians, artists. So we will go in and record at different locations and talk to different folks. So let me know who you think would be an interesting subject, like the interesting and paint-covered Danny Fisher, who has paint on her fingers as we're sitting here talking. Anything else? Anything else good out there?
No, but is the Alco really turning into a bowling alley?
I haven't heard that.
Okay.
Stay tuned
for that one.
The owners of that building, as of about 3 weeks ago, had nobody lined up, so I don't know.
Okay.
But it's a big space that could use a tenant.
Yes, it could.
Or it could be
a
huge gallery.
right? With your photography and my artwork, and I'll just round up everybody else. I'll tell a guy to bring my art back from the res because I still haven't picked it up.
I am convinced my photography will be greatly appreciated after I die.
Yeah, but we don't want to just have it that way.
I've got boxes and boxes of
I need to see
stuff
this stuff. Why can't I take some with me when I run around promoting myself?
I'm lazy and I don't
see these people. You just got to give it to me and I'll drag it along and give you your money.
Money, that's a good thing, but I think I'm allergic to it. It's something I need to avoid, I think.
It's been a pleasure. I think you're doing a great thing. I love that you're helping reach
out.
It's
fun. And I'll put this out to you. I did earlier. As we post where I'm going to be recording in locations, if you see something that catches your eye and you want to jump in and sit in and co-host or just take the show over, I have no problem.
You're
going
to have to put that on a newsletter that you send out to us. Beep us. So. We need to get a beeping.
It's primarily
turn left. There's beer there.
Well, Danny, thanks. Appreciate you spending time. This has been fun sitting out in Gabby's patio. Oh, and Gabby's Grill opened up a couple weeks ago at the Entertainment District. They're near the theater. So check out Jim and Kelly Cabral as they try out their new venture, Gabby's Bar and Grill. And again, plug it away. April
I really
24th,
want to see you guys.
25.
April 24th and 25th, 10 to 6, right there out there in front of Harkins Theater at the Entertainment District. Come show your support for the Food Bank and Humane Society and check out some awesome art and music.
Well, thanks for wasting time with me. Thanks. Appreciate it. Well, that was it. That was my talk with Danny Fisher. Thanks, Danny, for coming in. She brought me a little gift, a nice-looking ceramic owl that will go up on my mantle or on my desk at the Mile High Show headquarters, which is a spare room at my house. So thanks, Danny, for coming in and talking. We had a good time here at Gabby's. And again, I encourage you, jump on milehighshow.com in the Contact Us page and email who you think we should sit down and talk with. Always looking for interview subjects, artists, musicians, performers, comics, authors, just interesting folks in and around our location who you feel have a good story to tell, an interesting hour of conversation. Always looking for those suggestions. So please, milehighshow.com. Look for us also on Facebook at Mile High Show. We are also on Twitter and Instagram, both of them at Mile High Show. And that is high spelled HIMILEHISHOW, Mile High Show on Twitter and Instagram. And Mile High spelled HIGH, the traditional way, milehighshow.com on the web. So we look forward to your participation and suggestions. Thanks again for tuning in. We are available every Monday on iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Online and anywhere else you download your podcasts. So thanks for tuning in, and that's our show. Appreciate it.
Well, the first days are the hardest days. Don't you worry anymore. When life looks like easy street, there is danger at your door. Think this through with me. Let me know your mind. Whoa, what I want to know is, are you kind? It's a buck dancer's choice, my friends. Better take my advice. You know all the rules by now and the fire from the ice. Will you come with me? Won't you come with me? Whoa, oh, what I want to know.